joining us on the program right now, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen. Hello, Pam.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent. Excited about this somewhat spring-like weather we're finally getting.
Yes, it's about time.
We have heard for so long, 40 is the new 30, or 70 is the new 50. Right. Today's older generation is so much more active and vibrant that they're like today's grandparents. They're like your parents. Right. 70 is the new 50. But here's a report coming out of, the researchers are Dutch, coming out of the Netherlands that says 30 is the new 45. That 30-year-olds are like their parents, or are like 45-year-olds from a generation ago.
Yeah, that's
more
like
backwards.
What's happening today. I mean, the doctors here in Ontario are saying that this generation of children is probably going to be the first generation of children that won't live as long as their parents. So we're seeing more and more red flags coming out of even universities and researchers that are saying something is very, very wrong here. And yet, you know, a lot of the messaging that we're getting in the media with regards to this story doesn't give us a lot of specifics about what's really causing this problem. However, you know, when you look at groups like the World Health Organization, they're saying, you know, this processed foods, you know, all of these processed foods that are sitting in the middle aisles of a grocery store are a big problem, and they are indeed contributing and causing things like chronic disease and even obesity. So we know what's doing it. It's just that people, the messaging isn't just getting to the people. It's somehow blocked.
What's interesting, the other day, I'm down doing some research and came across this thing about groovy fashions from the 60s. And it was a photo essay in Life magazine, which, of course, you know, was famous for its photographs. So we're looking at groovy fashions from high school students from the 1970s. And it was amazing the body shapes back then. How in every photograph, it was tough. It was impossible to find an obese teenager. It was really tough to find even someone you'd think was overweight, that all the kids looked to be of healthy body weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, maybe the life editors could have picked out the, you know, the most photogenic kids, but there were so many photographs involving so many kids. To me, it's beyond a coincidence that the body type that we go back, I mean, this is going back 40 years, obviously, 44 years, mm-hmm. but still, in two generations, we've seen now the threat of obesity. Women in their 20s are twice as likely to be obese. Men in their 30s, 20% more likely to be overweight than in previous generations.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have this phobia. You know, we've never had more information about trying to be healthy. I guess we're just reading the wrong information.
Oh, yeah. And when you think about even the food guide, Tom, I mean, the food guide is a big part of the problem when you look at how many carbs they're recommending. I think I've told you before about my friend Dr. Louise Light, who worked for the USDA and developed the 1992 food pyramid. And she and her staff warned the Secretary of Agriculture and said, you can't recommend 6 to 11 servings of carbs on top of 5 to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables. If you do, you are going to create a diabetes and obesity epidemic. But the Secretary of Agriculture turned around and said, no, I'm going to stick with the 6 to 11 servings of carbs, 5 to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables, because essentially he had his back to the wall because of lobbyists, you know, from the grain industry. And unfortunately, the warnings were not heeded. And what are we seeing? A diabetes and obesity epidemic based upon the fact that we're just eating too many carbohydrates, and which essentially is what's the information that's coming out of both the government and the media.
What's interesting as well is situations or indigenous cultures that did not have easy access to carbohydrates. For instance, Native Canadians,
mm-hmm.
who lived on a subsistence diet and, you know, were hunter-gatherers and had very, very limited agriculture, seem to be the most at threat when we look at not necessarily the obesity, but certainly the diabetes epidemic that is
right.
ravaging Native communities.
Yeah.
You know, you look at, boy, oh boy, because they have such easy access to cheap and plentiful carbs,
yeah,
that
carbs
their body was never, I mean, their yeah. body was never going through this before.
Oh, there's a wonderful video on YouTube that you can look up, and it's of Dr. Weston A. Price. When he visited Africa, and it was videos he had in the 1930s or 40s, And he's talking to some African natives that live in a tribe and as such, of course, live in a very primitive manner. And he was just astounded by their musculature. And they were just so incredibly healthy overall. And with the eating in certain tribes, of course, if you look at the Maasai in Africa, they thrive on things like raw milk, raw cream, lots of meat in the diet. And even they used to drink, and they still drink, blood in the diet. That's, in some cultures, that's very normal. And here they are radiantly healthy on a very, very high fat, high cholesterol diet. So it's, you know, what we're getting from the medical establishment and the nutrition establishment, of course, to stay away from animal fat and cholesterol goes against all of our history in terms of mankind, because in the history of mankind, we never suffered with fat phobia or cholesterol phobia. We knew we needed these foods for our overall health. In fact, in many societies all around the world, we considered the foods that had the most fat and the most cholesterol in them to be sacred foods.
When they talk about metabolic age, we know chronological age is, you know, when we are born. All right, we can count the years since then. But what do they mean by metabolic age?
In the articles that I read, they were referring to things like obesity, and they were referring to things like blood pressure,
okay,
predominantly, when I was reading the articles on this story. But essentially, your metabolism is overall, in very, very simple terms, is the rate at which you burn your food, you burn your fuel. So if you're not burning your food effectively, of course, this is going to have an effect on your overall health as well. It's not just going to be adversely affecting things like blood pressure or your weight. So it's very complex. Your metabolism is very complex, and it involves many, many different variables in the body.
But an older person has a slower metabolism generally than a younger person?
Yes, in general terms.
Okay,
so they're not going to burn their fuel efficiently, especially if they're not looking after themselves.
Okay, so their body, when we look at someone and we don't know their chronological age, we can look at someone and be like, you've got the body or you've got the metabolism of a 45-year-old. When you're 30, when you're 60, that's great. When you're 30, that's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. And so people, when they're not burning their fuel effectively, of course, they can either gain weight and have a sluggish system. But I also see, in rare cases, I also see a fast metabolism where they're burning their fuel too fast, which is also unhealthy. And these are the fast oxidizers, which are more rare. Those are people who are typically rake thin and can't gain weight. And that's not healthy either. So either spectrum is what we're seeing today, typically. And we have to normalize our metabolism. And that comes from observing diets in cultures where people were healthy both physically and mentally. We need to mimic those habits so that we can be healthy ourselves. And so to truly understand what a healthy diet is, we have to look at history. We have to look at cultures where for generations they ate very much the same diet, and they knew what to eat just through wisdom. They didn't have the government telling them what to eat. They didn't have universities or the media telling them what to eat. They just knew because they observed what their parents and their grandparents ate. And that's what's been lost today, Tom. And that's why we're seeing that even our young people today are prematurely aging, so to speak.
Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. Pam joins us every couple of weeks. She's based in London, Ontario. PamColleen.com is her website. PamKilleen.com. Only because I'll tell you now, I often get emails and texts after the program. So PamColleen.com. All sorts of information, all sorts of links, great articles you can read from the latest scientific research in terms of what's happening in the food field of nutrition and health. Here's a comment I get, Pam, mm-hmm. and you probably get this as well, too. Eating healthy, I mean, we want to eat healthy, right? And you're talking about, you know what, if you go in the grocery store, stay away from the processed foods, stay away from those middle aisles, the packaged and processed foods, get to the outside where you find your healthiest foods, or even better yet, get out of the supermarket and link to your local farmer. Go to your farmer directly, know your source of food, know your farmer, get to know your source of food. The healthiest food probably will come directly from the farmer. Cut out the middleman, but that all being said, eating healthy is too expensive.
Oh, well, and I think a lot of people need to give up their iPhones, you know. Really, if you're eating nutrient-dense whole foods, number one, it's not terribly expensive when you look at the cost of these processed foods in the middle aisles. It's the processed foods that are very, very expensive. And I will also say it's extremely expensive to be sick. It's very, very expensive to be sick. to be disabled and to not be able to work for years and years and years, that's going to cost you a lot of money. And when you look at to the cost that you're putting on the healthcare system here in Ontario, for example, and how this healthcare system that we have is actually bankrupting this entire province. So I think everybody has to be a little bit more responsible. They have to prioritize where they're spending their money, because if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. So, you know, start economizing a little bit better. Start finding out what it is that you need versus what it is that you actually want. You know, a lot of people are spending money on things that they want, but they don't necessarily need. We need healthy food. We need nutrient-dense foods. And more than ever, when we look especially at this health crisis that we're seeing today.
What, one of the interesting things, though, is since the 50s or so, the share of Canadians' personal budget that has gone towards food, when we were used to be much more cost conscious at the supermarket, our food bill has actually plummeted.
That's right.
The average Canadian spent 25% of their take-home pay on food back in the 50s and 60s. It's now 10%. So the problem is we filled it, as you said, with all other stuff. We filled it with, you know, my cell phone bill and my cable bill, and I drive more expensive car and I pay more for gas. So we've filled up that gap, not thinking about, but we've cut back. I mean, if we compared to what, you know, our parents paid for food and the quality of that food, it's like, boy, you know what? If I paid for what my parents paid, if I used 25% of my income on food, I'd eat like a king. I could buy the best quality, the most nutrient-dense food, and as well, by eating better food, we also need to eat less food, which helps our food bill as well.
Well, I mean, when you're eating the right foods, you're not going to overeat.
So exactly,
it's not about necessarily rationing as much, because when you're getting enough animal fat in the diet, you won't want not.
I'm not going to binge on cookies.
Right? Like you're going to get the animal fat to satisfy your appetite.
Yeah.
And I always point out the first three letters of the word satisfy, saturated fat, right? S-A-T, satiety, right? When you get enough saturated fat in your meal, you probably won't overeat. So it's not necessarily about consciously rationing. It's about getting the correct nutrients, the correct calories that are going to satisfy the appetite.
Quick break in the program. Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant from London, Ontario, joining us on the show. Fascinating revelations from this Dutch study. 30 is the new 45. That 30-year-olds have the same metabolic age or had the body equivalent of their parents at 45 in this multi-year study examining, you know, obesity and blood pressure. Fascinating, fascinating insights. You know, we keep thinking we're getting healthier and healthier. Guess what? The generation behind you and me, it's not healthier at all. It's not even close to being healthier. Quick break in the program. Back with more with Pam Colleen after this on 610 CKTB. 10:50 is our time. This is News Talk 610 CKTB. Here's one from Ryan. Ryan asks, not sure if you heard Tim's view from the drive-thru this morning, Tom, but I wanted to ask Pam thoughts on the world population increases and the corresponding increase in demand for meat, which is interesting phenomena as India and China have become wealthier and wealthier. Their citizens are consuming more and more meat. You and I would think that's a good thing. Good. You know what? Your brain is starving. You can't live on rice alone. Have some meat. However, Ryan asks, how can the Earth support a diet for everyone that consists mainly of animal protein when it takes so much in resources to produce?
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of myths in and around that statement, because really, how can we sustain the population even on plant foods? You know, we really wouldn't be able to if the population continues to grow. But if people don't have enough animal foods in the diet, of course, it's not sustainable at all for the human race if we're depressed and infertile. So, and unfortunately, the direction that some of those statements where what they are actually saying is that if we're going to sustain ourselves on plant-based foods, which is unrealistic at two different levels, right? It's just not realistic to sustain, say, 10 billion people on this planet, because look at the costs that go into producing things like corn and soy and wheat. These are, you know, this kind of agriculture, industrial agriculture, is one of the greatest polluters on this planet. First of all, it's a very unsustainable system. But if we got rid of all of those fields of wheat and corn and soy, and we let grass grow and put the animals outside, now this would be a more sustainable model. And not only would it be more sustainable from the Earth's standpoint, it would be more sustainable in terms of human health, because then we could be healthier, happier, and we would maintain our fertility. So We have to look at it from both of those prongs. And in some areas of the world, keep in mind, the population is going down.
Well, it's going down. Now, my only contention is, not contention, I would just say, this goes back to Malthus, who believed that the world could not sustain anything over a billion people 100 plus years ago. We've gone to 7 billion, and we've reduced the amount of starvation in the world because we have massive agricultural innovations. I mean, we have better seed technology, irrigation, we have better, mechanization, we have more farming knowledge. I know you would support, well, let's get away from feeding cows corn and going into grass, but we've been able to support our population growth because our agriculture industry, fertilizer. It's like, yeah, that's one of the simplest things we've done. We've added fertilizer to the plants, so we're much more productive. So to then transition to protein doesn't take much in terms of innovation.
Just get rid of the fields of corn. And so, I mean, we have the grass. We have the ability to produce the grass so that the animals can be outside. Unfortunately, we've just, in the last 50 or 60 years, we've been blindsided by the CAFO system, by the factory farm system. And a lot of propaganda has come out of that area to say that it's a sustainable system that is going to feed the world. It's a very similar mantra that we hear from, say, the biotechnology industry, which is saying that genetically engineered foods are going to somehow miraculously feed the world, which is not the case, of course, because as we've seen through the literature, where people are growing genetically engineered foods, in many cases the crop yields are lower, not greater, which is what they promised. So there's a lot of contradictory information that we're getting today, and I think that we need to take a step back and stop thinking so hard, because our ancestors didn't have to think about what to eat. They knew what to eat through wisdom. So be very careful on some of this information that you're hearing. It's just going to complicate your mind. It's going to, people are going to suffer with what I call the paralysis of analysis, And healthy eating is very, very simple. The solutions are very, very simple. It's the misinformation that gets into our brain that makes healthy eating complicated.
Here's Bill asks, could you tell me why different doctors and nutritionists have different views on what is and what isn't good eating for people?
Well, it's healthy eating. A lot of healthy eating principles that come out today are based on marketing-based science, on urban myth, on dogma, and even on wishful thinking.
But don't you also think, though, that being said, that we're getting more and more information on how the body really works? And so as much as we have the, the urban myths or whatever, now people are coming forward, oh, here's what really happens when you consume sugar, or here's why the body needs protein, or these fatty acids. This is what's really happening in the body. Don't we also see that as more information is coming out, also the good information is starting to fight through?
Yeah, some of the good information is starting to surface through the university systems. Unfortunately, because the universities count on a lot of grant money coming from different food systems, different food areas, this is distorting a lot of the science that is coming out of the university system. But slowly and gradually, we are going to see some new independent science. I know Gary Taubes is doing some research with Dr. Peter Attia, and they've got some funding from a multi-billionaire hedge fund manager, and they're going to study the importance of animal fats, which is unfortunate that they actually have to spend money on this, because when you study history, that's how you're going to learn what healthy eating really is. So it's too bad that this research has to be done to prove something that our ancestors knew just through wisdom. And it's really, there's nothing complicated about it. It's nice, yes, Tom, that they understand sort of blood sugar regulations and how that influences the metabolism and so on. It's nice that they're learning some of these things at the university. But I have a text book from the medical schools that dates from 1944. Tom, it's from right 1944, and right in this medical text it says, if you want to regulate your blood sugar, then you need to get about 65 to 75% of your calories from fat, from animal fat. Some of this wisdom was there before World War II. It's just been lost because of so much misinformation that we're getting, in particular in and around animal fat and cholesterol.
Pam Colleen, always a pleasure. What do you have coming up in London? Doing any talks?
Yes, I have a talk tonight. It's my part two of my gut-brain connection. And so tonight's at the Central Library in London. And this fall, I'll be doing my whole nutrition boot camp as well. So if people want to monitor, I haven't got the dates posted yet, but I usually teach that class somewhere in and around October. But if you go to pamcolleen.com and you just watch my upcoming events page or Facebook me, I do put announcements on Facebook as well when I'm teaching classes. So if people want to just connect with me that way, that would be great.
One of the fascinating fascinating things is always, you know, we talk about having a gut instinct and how, but our gut is our second brain, isn't
it? Right.
You know, and there is a real connection between, between your gut and there's, you know, your gut and your brain communicate all the time. And so when we talk about gut instinct, you know, maybe your gut is telling you something.
That's right.
Pam Colleen, always a pleasure. We'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
10:58 is our time. This is News Talk 610 CKTB.